I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even at commentary. Nobody can touch me.
It is I, Sick and Duke, best Jew in the world, here with a brand new episode of CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews. This is episode 40, and ladies and gentlemen, it is WrestleMania season, and we are on the road to WrestleMania 31. And so it only makes sense that all this month we will be reviewing WrestleManias of the past. And on this episode, episode 40, we are covering one of the greatest of all time, or at least has two of the greatest matches of all time. I'm talking about the match that lives in legend, that is Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant and Macho Man versus Ricky Steamboat. I am, of course, talking about WrestleMania 3. And I am not alone for such an epic, legendary WrestleMania. No. Now, I have a special guest. Joining me is one of our returning champions, Corey, or as he likes to be known, C-Dub. So, C-Dub, how you doing tonight?
Doing fantastic, man. It's good to be here. Congratulations on 40 episodes, man. You're doing great work here, and I'm looking forward to covering WrestleMania 3. Definitely one of my favorite WrestleManias of all time.
Oh, absolutely. A little side note, our good friend Hairball, known as Harry, you know, you hear him do comment. He's commented here, and he's commented the WrestleCast, and I've done things for him. In fact, I've, promoted, his daughter's special fund that thank for all those who donated to that fund that helped the hospital and help him give money to the hospital. He was supposed to be here tonight. Unfortunately, he lost his voice, so he's not joining us, but I do want to send a big special thanks to Hairball for being willing to join us, and I'm sorry he couldn't make it, and I will make it up. I'll have Hairball on a later episode this month to talk some WrestleMania. So, unfortunately, we are down a member, but, got two guys here who I'm sure, with a 12-match card and some news, we're going to have a lot to talk about, so...
No doubt about it. Get well soon, Harry.
Yeah. So, before we get into WrestleMania 30, we do have a couple news items to talk about. I guess, really, we'll start off... let's start off with bad news and talk about good things later. So,
why not, right?
So, let's start... One of the big items that's really blown up in the past couple of days is the Bill DeMont controversy. Corey, since you're the guest... I'll let you start off. What do you think of this controversy?
Well, I mean, we've had, this isn't the first time we've had current or former WWE employees basically come into public and make claims about Bill DeMott and his behavior. Of course, Bill DeMott was formerly known as Hugh Morris in WCW.
The Laughing Man?
The Laughing Man, probably the finest member of the Dungeon of Doom, I mean.
And the finest member of the Misfits in action.
That's right, of course. I believe he was General Erection, which is just...
General Erection, and of course he had major guns.
Yes, of course.
Irene Buff.
Yes, yes. And her two friends that always came with her. Bill, he was certainly a talented guy in his time in the business. He ended up, for those of you that, you know, follow, which I'm, if you're listening to this, you must, Bill DeMott, you know, as Hugh Morris.
Especially if you're willing to put up with listening to me for an hour, hour and a half.
Absolutely. As you know, I mean, Bill DeMott, he was one of those guys who, he transcended the WCW shutdown. His contract was picked up by the WWE, and he had a short career there. Of course, he was a trainer on Tough Enough, and now he is the head trainer at the Performance Center. There's been previously some allegations of him roughing up the trainees, doing some unprofessional stuff. I mean, putting his balls in people's faces and just really condoning some pretty sophomorish behavior that comes from a completely different time in the wrestling business. A lot of these habits like this, and a lot of these things, the drug addiction, that's generally people being not good people in the wrestling business, seems to be one of those things that's dying out with these guys today. If you ask anybody backstage what the backstage aura is like, I mean, a lot of these guys, they don't go out and party. Some do, of course, but a lot of these guys, I mean, you know, they go to their hotel room and they play PlayStation or something. I mean, these aren't guys who are out chasing ring rats, doing drugs, and doing crazy stuff. But I personally feel like as long as WWE is in this transitional period of trying to completely distance itself from the old pro wrestling stigmas like this of just sophomoric behavior and just really unprofessional stuff, if it is true, of course, this is still all alleged at this point. I think as long as they have people who are from that, from the territories and prior, you know, those, there's going to be good apples and bad apples. And
well, there's a generational thing. I think you brought up, you know, time and that stuff. You know, there are certain points I think that do cross the line.
Yeah.
And, you know, with this and with bullying and with, you know, there have been news stories about, you know, hazing all over. Certainly there are things that cross the line. At the same point in time, I think what gets me is I know that I'm probably on, I don't know, I don't think I'm on the wrong side of history, but I know I'm on the team that's going to eventually lose to the what these days is the ultra sensitivity and pretty much everything from body fit, you know, body figure, body type, to how you train or whatever. But to me, you know, Bill DeMott comes off as a drill instructor. That's his coaching style. It's an old style of in your face, the, you know, I think there are things like putting balls on somebody's face. I think that does cross the line if true. But I think using language, including slurs and that stuff, part of the point is for him to be insulting.
Definitely.
That is what a drill sergeant does. His job is to get under your skin to push you to levels you did not know you had.
Yep.
That is the point of a drill instructor. See, I can't believe that he believes in half the things he probably says.
Yeah.
Now, some of the physical stuff, it's whether it's true or not. You know, I think reading Austin Matheson, I think it is, you know, he talked about being slapped in the head when he had a concussion. I think I was reading one of the tweets by Ethan Carter saying that he was slapped in the face when he had a concussion. Well, the question is, did he know he had a concussion when he slapped him in the face? And again, you're talking about being slapped in the face in a profession where you're slapped in the face.
Right.
It's...
You know, it definitely is. It's puzzling. It's one of those things, you know, again, these are all allegations. It's not something that's, you know, confirmed. But whenever you hear things like this happening more than once and you hear these reports come out more than once, chances are there is at least some credence to it. And, you know, if that is the case, then Bill, I feel like, needs to be moved to another position where he's not directly hand-in-hand training these guys. You know, as I said, he was a talented guy in the wrestling business.
I think he still is.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, anybody like him definitely has something to offer. But the fact of the matter is, WWE is a publicly held company. They have stockholders to answer to. I mean, stuff like this, it might have got away in 1987 here, like we're talking about, with WrestleMania 3. But in today's WWE, man, this kind of shit is not going to fly.
Yeah, well, of course, you bring up stockholders who don't know or don't understand or don't appreciate the business. I guess one thing I do worry about is it's setting a precedent for what is abuse in, or at least setting the line too far for what is abuse in an industry where it's an extremely physical industry.
Yes.
You know, in particular, an industry where you are punching, fighting, kicking, you know, suplexing people off a top rope.
Yeah.
You know, and so, I mean, again, you know, I bring up, you brought up the balls on people's faces. That is a completely sophomoric, and there's no excuse for that if that's true. That we agree with. But I think where I draw the line is, the slapping and, the drill sergeant mentality, that I don't think we can sit there and call that abuse. Yes, on a very technical level, this may be abuse, but it's abuse for a reason. It's not abuse to be abusive.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely see your point with that. Not to justify it if, he is slapping somebody who has a damn concussion, but, Bill DeMott, he didn't get these opportunities that these kids at the Performance Center are getting. I mean, these guys, Bill DeMott had to go all the way to Japan, Germany, I mean, even before he made it to WCW. Maybe it's part of it is frustration on his part that these kids are getting these chances that he never ever got, and maybe he feels like, what right do you guys have to be complaining whenever I had to do 10 times as much as you guys do to ever barely make it?
One of the things Chris Jericho brought up in his treatment and support of Bill DeMott was he brought up the fact that, in the Hart Dungeon, it was 10,000 times worse.
Yeah.
And that's why, there is this question about, is this just angry, disgruntled people who never made it? Because, if they're arguing about what goes on in NXT and the Performance Center, I would love to see them try to make it in the Hart family dungeon in its heyday.
Yeah, I don't see many people getting out of there alive. Tom, to put a nice little ribbon on all this, the fact of the matter is, pro wrestling always is and always will be something that is based upon trust. If you can't trust the person that you're in there in the ring with, if you can't trust the person that's signing your paychecks, if you can't trust the person that's training you, you're never going to excel. I mean, that's just all there is to it. It's not going to be good for the fans. It's not going to be good for the participants. It's just not going to be good. So the fact of the matter is, obviously, there is a lack of trust, or perhaps a lack of faith in Bill DeMott with his, at least some of his current or former trainees. And time will tell what happens with him and his position. Hopefully, that he can keep a spot somewhere in the company, because as we both said, he certainly has a lot to offer to these guys.
Oh, absolutely. And I absolutely agree with you. It is about trust and it's about faith. And, again, it goes back to sometimes when you don't lose that, those are two of the most important things anybody needs to have to make it in this business.
Yep.
I guess moving on to some good news. I want to save the best news for last. but, it is the road to WrestleMania. So what have you thought so far of WWE's build-up to WrestleMania? Because I think we can see some maps definitely have filled out. We know Triple H versus Sting. They're teasing Wyatt versus Undertaker, which I called a year ago should have been a match. And goddamn it, Wyatt should have been the one to take the goddamn motherfucking streak. Yes, I'm still pissed about Lesnar getting the streak, as a lot of people are. but we can see that. You have the heavyweight title fight, Lesnar versus Reigns. I have no idea why they're even attempting the storyline when we all know Cena is going to face Rusev. They're pissing me off with the way they're treating Cena. I love the Intercontinental. It's going to be apparently, an 8-man ladder match or something like that, because it could be Barrett, Ambrose, R-Truth, Ziggler, Brian, and Harper.
Yeah.
So yeah, a 6-man ladder match for the Intercontinental title.
Yep.
And they're also finally teasing Sandow versus Miz on what was one of the best segments of this past week's Raw.
Yes, the little Niagara commercial, of course, the parody of Viagra. That was pretty hilarious. I actually heard, of course, in medicinal commercials, they always have that part at the end where they read all the disclaimers super fast, Viagra may cause your head to explode. It may cause your penis to fall off. It may cause your leg to turn green. Well, I actually went back and slowed down the disclaimer that they included in that little vignette promo thing, the Niagara commercial. And they actually slipped in there as one of the side effects of Niagara, inability to get over.
Oh, my God. The writer who wrote this segment wins.
Yeah.
He is a winner, and he needs to be moved up to the main event scene writer.
I could not agree more.
It's like, God damn it.
I mean, to me, that was certainly a subtle jab at the Miz. Like you said, man, WrestleMania, this one's different. Of course, apparently now they have stopped referring to WrestleMania in numbers, and this year is actually WrestleMania play button, apparently.
Everybody's making that joke.
Yeah, it's apparently WrestleMania play button, and it's certainly, to me, this is, along with last year, this is the transition into the Paul Levesque, a.k.a. Triple H, Stephanie McMahon era. It really is. This is, to me, we're seeing a lot of young guys. We're seeing the old guard, guys like Cena, kind of spread across the card. I mean, it seems to me that we're obviously going to see Cena versus Rusev for the title. Cena wins. Maybe bring the Hulkster out there and let him, do his real American thing and a big USA, USA. Fantastic. To me, that is the remnants of a bygone era. That's the remnants of Vince McMahon. Like I was saying, I do like the fact that they're trying to spread out their talent a little bit more and perhaps make matches, in the undercard, in the mid-card and below. Not throwaway matches, not bathroom break matches.
Yeah. I mean, it has to be better than last year where there was... I apologize, folks. Sorry, I had my phone on, folks. Just a little warning. I'm hoping and begging for I live in New Jersey. I'm hoping and begging for a message from the college that says school is canceled tomorrow. Because God fucking damn it, we're supposed to get 5 to 8 inches.
Oh, man.
And it's been about an hour so far since our lovely governor declared a state of emergency, and I'm like, what the fuck is keeping these motherfuckers? So I apologize for that.
it's funny you mentioned, Tom, about the Bray Wyatt and Undertaker thing. That's something, even before this time last year that I was calling for as well. I thought for certain Bray Wyatt is the guy. I mean, even a year ago, he had...
That was the best. I think that was the best match of the night at last year's WrestleMania.
Cena and Wyatt.
Cena and Wyatt. I mean, God damn it, they told such a wonderful story.
They did.
I mean, and I'm really enjoying everything about this except for the Cena Rusev. And again, because they should have done one match. It should have been one match. Should have been done at WrestleMania. They should have really built the feud better. And it's like, I really hate how disrespectful to Cena's character they are. I loved it when he called, Steph a bitch.
Yeah.
And he should have followed up on that instead of cowering and then like, oh, we're going to do this whole female empowerment thing now. So it's like, Bro, it's John Cena. Can we please let John Cena be John Cena? Please, can we let John Cena be John Cena? Real John Cena? It's like...
Yeah. I mean, you know, to me, John Cena's not in a position where he should be number one on the card anymore. I mean, he can be if WWE is ever in a pinch, but I don't feel like that he should be all the time. And I feel like it would benefit them to make that space and leave that space available for the younger guys to get over. You know what I mean? Guys like, you know, pretty much everybody save for R-Truth in the Intercontinental Championship ladder match.
At the same point in time, I would sit here and say that Cena is the face of your company, and he is the veteran guy, and he is a guy, you know, the fact of the matter is, here's the difference between a good and bad John Cena match. It has nothing to do with John Cena, because he does a good match every time. It's whether the wrestler opposite of him wants to put on a good match. When you have wrestlers that don't care, the matches suck. But when you have wrestlers like Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose and all these wrestlers who want to actually make it, you know, and work with him, they put on these excellent matches. You know, I can understand him not being in the main event, but damn it, his storyline should be scripted better, and they have no idea what they want to do with his character. They have no idea because they all because they basically view him as nothing but a T-shirt seller now.
I mean,
and it pisses me off because he's a better wrestler than they let him be.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. You know, to me, if you go back in history and look at who is the ultimate company guy for that company, for Vince McMahon, and works his ass off, nobody is even going to hold a candle to John Cena. I mean, the guy, whether you like him, whether you hate him, whether you think he's the worst wrestler in history, or you own every color of Cena shirt, there's certain things that you just can't deny about the guy, and he is there all the time. He brings it every single time. I haven't seen many terrible Cena matches where it's his fault, but I've seen some pretty crappy crowd reactions. Of course, they're not, you know, it doesn't seem like they're going to turn him heel anytime soon.
God, I have never been begging for John Cena to turn heel than I have been in the past, like, 4 months.
I mean...
I can't believe I'm saying that, but God damn it.
I mean, historically, you have to look back at, you know, a guy like a Hulk Hogan. He was the babyface, the good guy that the fans could always rely on. And whenever you set somebody up like that, whenever you finally do turn him like Hogan did in 96, it's huge. So I feel like, you know, obviously John Cena's on the tail end of his career here. He's certainly past his prime, or past the apex of his career. So,
well, he's at least past the apex of it being a babyface. As it gets, it's time for him to move into either being a heel or being a neutral sort of character.
Yes. And, you know, this could be the thing that propels John Cena on to more longevity and more relevancy. I mean, sometimes you have to give the crowd what they want. WWE doesn't always like to do that. But, you know, we'll see with that. Triple H and Sting is definitely going to be my most anticipated match, along with Bray Wyatt and The Undertaker. I feel like both of those are going to tell some awesome stories. And
I think Bray Wyatt and Undertaker are going to steal the goddamn show and be match of the year.
Yeah, and I know right now, as we're recording this, it is, like you said, only a 6-man ladder match. It would not surprise me in the least to see it expanded to an 8-man ladder match and perhaps include Sheamus. Well, I take it you're...
Well, but it's 6-man, so it's Sheamus, and then who would the 8th man be?
Good question. That's an excellent question you have there. You could certainly plug somebody in there, but, you know, to me, I mean, I would bring Sheamus back as, you know, somebody and throw him in there as the big wrecking ball, somebody who can take everybody out in the match. It's going to be really interesting, that ladder match. I kind of look at it like the modern day equivalent to the old Money in the Bank. And
that's obviously what it is, but goddamn it, we still miss it in WrestleMania.
Yeah, definitely, man. So, you know, it's going to be awesome to see WrestleMania. I'm hoping that next year WrestleMania star, WrestleMania Dallas Cowboys logo is also going to be awesome. I hope that Undertaker he finally gets that fitting end to his career or something where he can, you know.
Oh, next year he's getting inducted. I'll call the two inductees for next year. It has to be Undertaker, and it has to be the Freebirds.
The Freebirds, and, you know, there's no better place than, of course, in Texas. I could definitely see that happening. I'm looking forward to this year's WrestleMania and next. I'm sure we'll be doing a little bit more chit-chatting about next year's WrestleMania and the time to come.
Yeah. Well, down to our final sort of topic news-wise. The best thing to come out is that there is a lot of indications, and they're all rumors, so let's accept these are rumors. But the indication is that later this year, possibly in April, because that Samoa Joe might join the WWE and NXT. Because the indication is that he's only accepting dates for Ring of Honor up to like the end of March, and more importantly, other organizational independent dates up to like April, I think it's like April 28th or something, which is supposed to be an NXT TV taping date.
Man, you know, I've been hearing the news, of course, here lately, as most of us have, that NXT is looking to expand and actually take the people there on the road rather than just throughout the state of Florida for live events, which I think, you know, that's fantastic. We've seen recently the Brian Kendrick and, of course, Rhino come back on NXT. And I absolutely feel like that they're doing that, you know, in preparation for taking the show on the road. That gives them some name value, you know, along with, say, perhaps a guy like a Bubba Ray Dudley, who showed up in the Royal Rumble. You know, these are all guys who could benefit from having a WWE exclusive contract to make these indie shows, and essentially WWE would be then cornering not only the biggest part of the market, you know, the television and pay-per-view and the network and the live events, but they would also essentially be taking away a lot of momentum from the indies. You know, these are all guys who would get booked as a main attraction on any indie show. To me, it definitely feels like this is a smart move on their part. They can take the experience of these guys who can still go in the ring, and you know, these young cats can really, really benefit from that. And of course, the crowds. I mean, it's going to be awesome.
My God, the best organization, the best brand. I guess we can call it. In all of wrestling, is goddamn NXT.
It just is.
And my God, Owens versus Joe.
Oh, man.
I'm right now ready to throw my money at my computer screen, but it's doing nothing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, WWE in recent years, they've signed the best of the best of the indies, man. They've got Bryan Danielson, Tyler Black, Jon Moxley, all these guys, man, Generico, Steen. I mean, these are all guys who were the kings of the indies. Claudio Castagnoli, Cesaro, whatever his name is these days. You know, Joe could definitely benefit from coming to WWE, and WWE could benefit from Joe. I feel like, though, if he doesn't end up going to NXT, and this is all just rumors, that I feel like Joe is probably going to go to Japan. I feel like the Japanese fans in New Japan, namely, they really appreciate Joe's style. He has a history there. I don't think Samoa Joe is going to be short on work anytime soon.
Oh, no. It is kind of starting to look like, you know, maybe New Japan is starting to rise to a province where it's going to go beyond just being in Japan.
Absolutely.
I mean, it'll be centered in Japan, but their influence will start to go around the world, especially with Wrestle Kingdom 9 and, you know, how good that show was.
Yeah. I mean, to, you know, to tie this into our WrestleMania discussion, it's going to be really tough for any company to top Wrestle Kingdom 9 as the show of the year in my eyes. I mean, that was just so perfect. For WWE to get Samoa Joe, we're looking down the road at like WrestleMania 33, WrestleMania 34, at these this next generation of main event guys and who they can bring in. And
all I could say is this. I want Cena versus Joe.
Oh, man.
I want it for the title, and I want it at WrestleMania.
You know, those are two guys that trained in California, of course, with UPW, Rick Bassman.
Yep.
Those guys would have an awesome match. Samoa Joe is a guy like a Brock Lesnar who is physically believable. He's entertaining in the ring. You know, he's another guy who's past his prime, perhaps, but... I feel like he has a ton to offer both in the ring and backstage.
And these are the two guys that are, I mean, Joe also had Styles to help him carry TNA, but they're two of the guys that helped carry their company.
Absolutely.
So, that's pretty much it for news. And I think that's given us some good time as we start our way towards our main topic of the night, WrestleMania 3, so let me give you the tale of the tape. The tagline is Bigger, Better, and Better, with the theme song of Who's Zooming Who by Aretha Franklin, brought to you by the WWF, a.k.a. the World Wrestling Federation. WrestleMania 3 took place on March 29th, 1987, at the Pontiac Silverdome in Pontiac, Michigan, in an attendance of 93,173, and let us add that there really should be no way anybody can confuse the Silver Dome for the Superdome.
Brother. Yeah.
Your color commentating, what was that?
I was going to say just a quick little tidbit about Aretha Franklin and her performance. She was actually almost late for that. She basically, because of the flow of traffic into the Silver Dome, in Detroit or Pontiac there. I mean, the entire interstate was backed up. She almost didn't make it, but she did make it there in time. Please, Tommy, continue with the tale of the tape.
Well, the tale of the tape is your celebrities will be Aretha Franklin, Alice Cooper, Mary Hart, Bob Uecker, among others. Your color commentators are Gorilla Monsoon and Jesse the Body Ventura, future governor of Minnesota. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get into WrestleMania 3. Welcome back, and oh my god, we have 12 matches to go through. Ah, the 80s, where you could have a 12-match card.
Yeah, man. I mean, this WrestleMania was chock full of participants and combatants. We had all shapes and sizes, certainly.
And we have no dark matches, so our very first match is the very first match. The very first match is the Can-Man connection of a... pre-heel Rick Martel and Tom pre-Z-Man, WCW Z-Man, Zeke, versus the Cowboy, Bob Orton, and the Magnificent Morocco, and managed by Mr. Fuji in a tag team.
Yes, easy for you to say. this was, like you said, the Can-Am connection, Rick Martel and Tom Zink taking on Ace Cowboy Bob Orton with his signature cast. Man, that arm injury had to be really bad.
I didn't see the cast on his arm.
Did he not have it?
I did not see the cast on his arm.
Okay, this may have been after they had the whole thing where they disproved the cast was legit. This match was pretty good as an opener. Nothing really to write home about. The significance of this match, I feel like, is that the K&M Connection was an attempt for WWE to, of course, at the time they were expanding beyond just the Northeast and the United States, trying to move north. And this was sort of a precursor to the tag team we saw later in 1987 after Tom Zink left shortly after WrestleMania here due to a contract dispute. Strikeforce of Tito Santana and Rick Martel, who of course were WWE Tag Team Champions, and also
Martel decided to become a mark.
That's right, and yeah, of course, there was a long storied feud between he and Tito Santana. That's one of my favorite feuds in WWE history, just because of they kept it going for so long.
Is Rick Martel in the WWE Hall of Fame?
He's not, but he should be, man. Rick Martel.
Yeah, he's. My God, one of the most memorable heels, I think, of the 19, of the Rock and Roll and Wrestling Connection, but of the prime of what was early 90s, late 80s WWE wrestling.
Yeah, I definitely agree, man. Martel was awesome as the model, and he was good as a babyface with Zink and as well, with Tito. I mean, we're talking a guy who was a AWA heavyweight champion at a former world heavyweight champion whenever the AWA title was that significant. I would say the other half of the historical significance of this match is that we saw Orton and Morocco teaming managed by Fuji. Later on, those guys would actually end up feuding, and it would lead to Don Morocco's subsequent face turn and being known as The Rock Don Morocco, and being managed later in the year by superstar Billy Graham.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I agree with you. I really did enjoy this match. Again, it was power versus the speed. It's that classic matchup, and in this case, speed won. I love the commentating, but, it's legendary at this point, but Monsoon and Ventura just feed off each other wonderfully. And I think one of the things that I just love about how they do is the little things like how this match ended and Ventura having a problem with the double teaming.
Yeah.
And they continue that throughout the night in other tag team matches.
Yep.
That continuity thing that I really ties it all together.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Our next match is a singles match as Billy Jack Haynes faces Hercules with Bobby Heenan, and wow, I actually did enjoy this match.
Yeah, these were two guys, Billy Jack Haynes, and and Hercules.
Has Bobby? Are you saying that you actually work for Bobby Heenan?
I may or may not be a lifetime member of the Heenan family and a self-professed humanoid. this was your classic 80s power versus power match. They sold that. I believe both guys utilized the full Nelson as their finisher or one of their signature holds. Ended in a double count out. I feel like it was a little bit longer than it should have been. This was one of Billy Jack's last real, runs as far as being on a major card. This was, I believe, his only WrestleMania as well.
Well, the thing about it, the storyline was that Billy Jack Haynes was the master of the, I almost called it the master lock, but it's the full Nelson.
Yes.
But as Chris Masters would later call it, the master lock.
Yes.
And then the whole storyline was basically Hercules came to wrestling, Bobby Heenan, I guess, taught him the full Nelson lock, and so they both used it at that point. So Billy Jack had it first, and then Hercules developed it into his arsenal. And so it was a battle of the full Nelson locks.
Yeah, and also I believe Hercules, at the time, Billy Jack was teaming with his real-life cousin, Brady Boone, in the WWF on the lower card matches. And I believe at the time, Hercules actually also attacked Brady Boone, and that was one of the perhaps the ignitions to this big feud.
But yeah, I definitely agree with you, and I personally don't enjoy this match. I just love the whole power versus power contest here.
Yeah.
Moving on to our next match is a match that I guess would live in infamy. We have Hillbilly Jim, the Haiti Kid, and Little Beaver versus King Kong Bundy, Little Tokyo, and Lord Littlebrook in a mixed tag team match, or basically you six-man tag where two of the contestants on each team are midgets or little people.
It's little people, Tommy.
Hey, I'm just a guy from the 80s who's out of time and out of touch.
Nice Hall & Oates reference. How?
Yes. Yeah, this kind of lives in infamy. I think if Jerry the King Lawler was commentary, he would say that they're climbing up King Kong Bundy like they climbed up Brokeback Mountain.
Oh, man. I would say the funniest line of the night came from Bob Uecker during this match. I seem to recall him saying something to the tune of, "There's a lot of beaver all over this place." Of course, referring to the midget legend, midget wrestler Little Beaver, who a lot of fans don't know this, but his brother is another legendary midget wrestler, Skylo Low. And of course, you know, we had Haiti Kid, Lord Littlebrook, you know, call it what you will, midget wrestling was always kind of a funny thing on WWF cards, but these guys were legit legends. These guys paid their dues in the business. Of course, you got Hillbilly Jim, who was relatively new to the scene. I believe he was just fresh off of his terrible leg injury that happened right around the time of his debut. And, you know, we ended up seeing a pancake of little person on the mat whenever King Kong Bundy decided to turn on his team, being frustrated with them losing the match. And he just absolutely squashed one of them with a big splash.
It was Little Beaver, actually.
Yes.
In fact, I was just reading something to where in an interview, I think King Kong Bundy said that he hoped that, you know, his squashing of him didn't cause his premature death, which would happen until 95.
Yeah, you know, something that Hillbilly Jim actually mentioned is, I mean, obviously it's tough for a guy like King Kong Bundy to land on someone like that and not really hurt him. Hillbilly Jim had to carry Little Beaver, of course, you know, we saw down the aisle, which was huge. It was a huge aisle, and he carried him. He said that Little Beaver, you know, Hillbilly Jim's not a small guy by any stretch of the imagination. He said that that was the most weight and the most grueling lift of his life was carrying Little Beaver back to the dressing room after this match.
But definitely, I mean, it's only 3 minutes, 25 seconds, and really, match came alive when the big guys came in. But, you know, it's nice to see the little guys get their due. You know, I think it's unfortunate that little people wrestling or midget wrestling or however you want to basically call it, they do good stuff and they don't get the respect they deserve. You know, I loved it when the midget division was part of SmackDown. I thought that was innovative, and I thought that was giving midget wrestlers their due. I mean, goddammit, one of the best matches of last year was El Torito versus Hornswoggle in a VLC match.
Yeah, that was hilarious. And, you know, it was good. I mean, like you said, you know, I feel like at the time, you know, like we mentioned before, the midget wrestling, the little people wrestling, that was, it was treated as a comedy. It was treated as kind of a circus-y sideshow kind of act. And that's something that WWE has never really done, is featured the little people in a serious manner. But nevertheless, it's great to see them get their big moment here with guys like Lord Littlebrook, Haiti Kid, Little Beaver. You know, these are guys who paid their dues and certainly earned their spot on the card.
Oh, yeah. So overall, though, I'd say I enjoyed the match because it was fun.
Definitely.
Our next match, Harley, or the King Harley Race, with Bobby Heenan and the Fabulous Moolah, versus JYD, the Junkyard Dog.
Yes, and of course, the big stipulation with Harley Race at the time being the king of the World Wrestling Federation was that the loser of this match had to bow to the winner.
Now, I have to say this. I was a little confused because when I heard Harley Race's music, I thought, oh my God, it's Jerry Lawler.
The Great Gates of Kiev, of course, is the name of that piece of music. They've used that for as long as I can remember, going back to 87 here, and when they first had Harley Race as the king of the World Wrestling Federation, of course, after winning the King of the Ring tournament.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't the King of the Ring tournament, but there wasn't any pay-per-view for it back then.
Correct.
It would be till 94. I mean, I think that's one of the things that many people don't know about the King of the Ring, is that it was going on well before 1994. It just wasn't televised.
Absolutely. It was usually only featured at the Capitol Center, I believe, in Landover, Maryland.
Yeah. Yeah. This is an enjoyable match. It says it's 3 minutes, 22 seconds. This match felt it was like at least 5 minutes. Now, and that just, I mean that in the sense of that there was so much going on that it felt longer than it was.
Yeah.
That this is not a bad thing. We kind of talked about this earlier, and I think you gave me the indication that some of these matches went on that they felt like they dragged on in the sense that they were long. But I meant in the way of a lot of these matches had so much going on that it doesn't feel like it was only 3 minutes. It felt like it was 6 minutes, but that's because of the amount of content they gave us.
Yeah, I agree, definitely.
Definitely, I kind of lost my way. I apologize, folks. It's live podcasting is awesome. thank you, Randy Orton, for that quote that will live in infamy. but no, I did enjoy the ending. The ending that came out of nowhere, classic Bobby Heenan, causing distraction, leading to the belly to back or belly to belly suplex by Harley Race. To get the win, of course, the holding of the tights. And then, of course, his Junkyard Dog. He gives the curtsy, gives the bow, and then bashes him with the chair.
Of course. And hates the ring. Of course, man. JYD was huge. I mean, the guy was massively over in the South as well as in the World Wrestling Federation back in these days. It was definitely good to see JYD in classic form against a first ballot Hall of Famer, probably one of the top 50 people to ever lace up a pair of boots, if not the top 20, maybe even top 10, depending on your thoughts, Harley Race.
Oh, yeah. So that was a good match. Our next match is a tag team match. You had the Dream Team of Greg the Hammer Valentine and Brutus Beefcake. I guess this was before he would be Brutus the Barber Beefcake. With Johnny Valent and Dino Bravo versus the... Well, help me out here, because my French-Canadian is awful.
That would be the Dream Team, Greg Valentine, and Brutus Beefcake.
No, I got that.
Absolutely, yeah. accompanied by Johnny V and Dino Bravo, taking on the Rougeau brothers, Jacques and Raymond.
See, I accepted it there. I call them Raju, as if they're, you know, we should dip some beef into it.
Raju.
Okay, folks, kind of like John Green on Crash Course on YouTube, which you should definitely check out, and yes, I am pimping that, messing up names is my thing. but this was a pretty short tag team match. I guess this was the lead... This is the breakup of the Dream Team as well. I guess that's the historical importance. And the leading to, of course, would along with our next match, would be the leading to Brutus becoming the Barber.
Absolutely. Prior to this, of course, at WrestleMania 2, Valentine and Beefcake were the tag team champions.
Oh, yeah.
What this essentially was Brutus Beefcake's exit and shift over to being a babyface and being the Barber. And Dino Bravo would take his place as the new Dream Team with Greg Valentine and feud with Brutus Beefcake. the Rougeaus. Of course, Jacques would go on to become the Mountie and have an awesome career.
I'm the Mountie.
You know, the Rougeaus, those are some guys who had a great family history from Montreal, up there in Canada. Their father, their brothers, all of them, you know, have a history in wrestling. The Rougeaus were babyfaces in this match, which is kind of weird to see, because they would later go on, of course, to be managed by Jimmy Hart and to do the whole... We have moved from Montreal to Memphis, Tennessee, and they were just super patronizing and really, really, you know, just they would
have a huge feud with the British Bulldogs.
Yes,
and I bring that up because I love watching the Legends of Wrestling, and the one story I remember is the one being told by Pat Patterson about the fight that they got in with the British Bulldogs, in which I think Dynamite broke Jacques. It was either Jacques or Raymond. I can't remember who.
It was Jacques.
It was Jacques.
Yeah, Dynamite Kid. Apparently something had happened. Somebody had played a rib on him, and he had suspected that it was Jacques Rougeau, when in fact I believe it was Kurt Hennig. If I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong.
Yeah.
But he basically sucker punched Jacques and knocked his teeth out. Later on, you know, Jacques and Raymond would come up and they would get their revenge on Dynamite. Of course, that's another story for another time. Maybe we'll have to talk about the most infamous moments, perhaps, in wrestling history.
Yeah. But, you know, this is another classic power versus speed match. In this case, though, power won. So, again, you know, they're balancing it out. And, you know, we do kind of see a bit of a pattern developing here of heels. They're getting the victory while the faces are getting the last laugh. The heels are either getting the victory or they're just getting disqualified.
Yeah.
So, again, remember this, because I actually enjoy this booking-wise. I think this is a very smart booking decision they did with this WrestleMania. Our next match is basically a match where one of the wrestlers win, lose, or draw. This was his last match. We're, of course, talking about the legendary, or was supposed to be his last match, but we all know how retirement works in wrestling.
Yes.
In a hair versus hair match, we have Rowdy Piper versus Adrian Adonis, managed by Jimmy Hart. I enjoyed this match.
Oh yeah, man, these guys, they had an awesome feud. Of course, you know, Piper was sort of the originator of the interview segment in the WWF, with Piper's Pit. It was later replaced whenever Piper took a little hiatus by Adrian Adonis's The Flower Shop. Adrian, you know, was an awesome, awesome technician. This was a little bit later in his career, of course, just prior to his demise, unfortunately. But Adrian was playing up, to be frank, he was playing up a homosexual gimmick whenever he wasn't actually homosexual. And at the time, I mean, this got massive heat with the crowd. And he, to his credit, Adrian played this up so over the top. It's funny to see two people named Adrian essentially playing the same gimmick in Adrian Adonis and Adrian Street, who is a legendary, another androgynous wrestler, you know, much like Goldust. To me, you know, this was awesome. You know, this was one of those, like all these feuds and matches, they really took time to slow build these over time on weekly television. And, you know, Piper came out with the bat and he completely wrecked the flower shop. And I believe...
As Piper can with his fiery temper, which is awesome.
Yeah, man. This was, like you said, mentioned, this was billed as Piper's farewell match. He would go on later in the year to film a television pilot with Jesse Ventura called Tag Team, about two wrestlers who I think tried to become cops or something. It never took off.
God damn it!
More.
I've watched that so many times.
Dude, I'm pretty sure it's out there. I'm pretty sure you can find the pilot episode out there somewhere.
I mean, if WWE is looking for content to put on the network, that's one of them.
Absolutely.
As for this match, I really enjoyed this match. Again, I keep talking about how these matches, so much goes on that you can't believe how short they were because they felt longer in a good way. This is another example of that. I mean, Jimmy Hart getting launched like a fucking lawn dart and knocking them out of the ring. It's like, wow.
Yeah, I gotta say, man, the heel managers didn't have a good night on this WrestleMania 3 here.
Well, Heenan did.
Yeah, yeah.
Jimmy Hart's a different story. Jimmy Hart got his ass kicked pretty much all night long with the exception of the Hart match. Yeah.
That was awesome. Jimmy was, you know, to me, no matter who it was he was managing, which actually at the time, another thing to mention from the prior Bob Orton and Magnificent Morocco match is that not only was Mr. Fuji managing them at the time, but on occasion, Jimmy Hart would manage the team.
Yeah.
So, you know, at the time, Jimmy Hart was a busy man.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I feel like everybody played their role perfectly in this match. It's certainly really character driven.
And I love the continuity here of basically the reason Adrian Adonis loses is because he got cocky and he let go of the sleeper hold or the Goodnight Irene, as it was called.
That's right.
Too early. And Piper comes back up, ends up putting the sleeper on him, and of course would be Brutus coming out, and he ends up being the barber who shaves Adrian.
Yeah, and who would also, I'm not sure if he used the sleeper as a finish prior to this, but he would infamously, of course, as the barber, use the sleeper hold as his finisher.
Yeah. But yeah, great match. And it was great to see Roddy Piper, who was probably the best wrestler there besides Macho Man. And I mean, at least one of the biggest one alongside Macho and Hulk, as far as the biggest names are concerned.
Certainly. And I mean, in terms of experience on the roster at this time, you know, Roddy Piper had wrestled since he was a teenager. So at this point, you know, he was an over 10-year pro, a guy who was very well seasoned. And this was sort of that middle of the card, semi-main eventish type match. To me, looking back on it, at least, it seemed like it was a big deal compared to some of the other previous matches that we've talked about here.
Oh yeah. Now, of course, Jimmy Hart had to probably do a quick coat change because the next match is the Hart Foundation, Bret Hart and Jim Neidhart, and Danger's Danny Davis, who is a former referee who apparently fixed some matches, with Jimmy Hart versus the British Bulldogs of Davey Boy Smith and the Dynamite Kid and Tito Santana.
That's right. This was a huge six-man tag team match, of course. Like you mentioned, Dangerous Danny Davis, going back to whenever Randy Savage defeated Tito for the Intercontinental.
Which is a year and 2 months, I think.
Yeah, back at the Boston Garden in 86. He, you know, it all start kind of stemmed from that. And Danny Davis kind of kept it was super subtle. I mean, as far as WWE or WWF, you know, their presentation at the time. But this was another one of those slow burn things that was just it was perfect. Of course, you know, seeing a cheating ref like that, like Danny Davis, it was perfect. He, of course, was the person who allowed the Hart Foundation to become the champions. Defeating the Bulldogs not too long prior to this as well, I believe.
Yeah. Sorry, I was doing research on Danny Davis. I didn't realize he was part of the Battle Royal at Wrestle. Wait a minute, what? Again, I was doing research, and now I have to go back and see it. Sorry. apparently this past year's WrestleMania 30, he made his first appearance for the WWE since 95.
He did, yeah. He was in that backstage segment with, I believe, Paul Orndorff and a few others.
Yeah. As far as this match is concerned, I enjoyed it. The best part of the match, obviously, in this classic setting, was when the faces took over and finally got their hands on Dangerous Danny.
Yes, absolutely. And of course, Jimmy Hart gets tossed like a lawn dart in the match prior to this. And then as soon as he gets to the ring, Matilda tries to chew him to bits.
Oh my god, I love that. It's like, god damn it. I mean, they trained that dog well, because that dog was like, the minute he was on the mat, gone. Yeah. After Jimmy Hart.
Yeah, I'm thinking they must have certainly coached that dog or had it well trained to attack Jimmy Hart, because that was just too perfect.
Oh, it was. It absolutely was. And again, one of my favorite moments of the WrestleMania was definitely that that tombstone of Dan.
Oh, man.
By Dynamite. Was it Dynamite or was it Davey Boy?
I believe it was Dynamite.
Yeah, on Danny Davis. And again, the continuity here, he brings him up to do more damage, and it ultimately leads to them losing the match by Megaphone and Danny Davis getting the win.
Yeah, you know, it's something to mention about these two teams, the Hart Foundation and the British Bulldogs. If you go back and you look at all the tag teams of all time, certainly of the 80s, these two teams are well established as being the best. These guys had so many matches, both in the WWF and also elsewhere. You know, all these guys, of course, were products of the Hart family, Stampede Wrestling up in Calgary. So these guys were no stranger to each other by the time they reached this stage. And, I mean, if you're a fan listening to this who hasn't seen the body of work that the Hart Foundation and the British Bulldogs put in the 80s around this time, do yourself a favor and go back and watch it.
Oh, my God, there's wonderful tag team matches.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's kind of my only criticism of this, is as much as I like Tito Santana and I love Danny Davis, I would have rather just seen the Bulldogs versus the Hart Foundation.
I agree.
Yeah. But still an enjoyable match. This is one of the few to where it did feel like it dragged a bit at certain places.
Yeah.
Probably because it was a longer match. But with that, let's move on to our next match. We have the Natural Butch Reed with Slick versus Coco Beware.
Yes. Of course, we had the natural, like you said, Butch Reed with his natural blonde hair, along with the doctor-style Slick. You know, Coco was certainly hot at the time. I don't believe the WWF had released Piledriver, the wrestling album, 2 yet. Of course, we heard Coco, which this surprised the heck out of me. On the network, he actually... he, like he did in the arena and on the original pay-per-view broadcast, comes out to The Bird by, I think, Morris Day and The Time.
Yeah.
And that's something that they haven't edited off the network, so I'm kind of wondering if they've paid the royalties for that or what. All that aside, this was a pretty
Yeah. I figured that when it comes to the network, it's left better unsaid. I guess it depends on the artists.
Yeah.
I think some artists like figure probably smartly that, hey, WWE is a big company, you know, why charge them royalty fees when probably it will bring people my way? And then there are people like Metallica who want to be dicks about everything.
Yes. Yeah, but I mean, you know, honestly, as a musician, I can certainly sympathize with that. WWE makes a lot of money. WWF at the time makes a lot of money off of this footage, so... aside from all that, this was a pretty quick match. It was really inconsequential. Butch Reed would stick around long enough in the World Wrestling Federation, of course, to make it to the WrestleMania 4 tournament. And he would go on to success in NWA WCW as one half of the World Tag Team Champions with Ron Simmons. Doom.
Yep.
And of course, Coco Beware, I mean, Hall of Famer, man.
Yep. And, you know, this was a very enjoyable match. Again, it was power versus speed. It was a short match. And once again, you had ultimately the heel winning, but the babyface coming out on top in the end when Tino Santana came out to help Coco Beware.
Yeah.
So you see this thing, you see this common continuity, which, again, I like.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that is the thing about some of these matches. Some of these matches are pretty much the same, but it's building this feeling of the heels winning.
Yeah.
That grows throughout this pay-per-view.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Superman.
Captain Marvel.
Batman.
It is 1985.
Robin of Earth 2.
Sergeant Rock.
The Legion of Superheroes.
This is the most eagerly awaited comic book event in 50 years.
Tommy Tomorrow.
Jonah Hex.
Commandy.
It will one day be called the greatest comic book event of all time.
Swamp Thing.
Wonder Woman.
The New Teen Titans.
The Haunted Tank.
Infinity Incorporated.
Worlds will live.
Green Arrow.
Worlds will die.
Supergirl.
The Flash.
And that is only the beginning.
The Justice League of America.
The All-Star Squadron.
The Huntress.
Ariane.
The Metal Man.
Firestorm. The Nuclear
Man. The Outsiders.
Green Lantern.
The Blue Beetle.
The Crime Syndicate.
Warlord.
The Guardians of the Universe.
Tales of the Justice Society of America proudly presents...
And many, many more.
Crisis on Infinite Earths. The DC Universe will never be the same.
Coming January only at twotruefreaks.com.
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters, or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman, or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at twotruefreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
Michael.
Hey, Dad.
We need to record another new trailer.
Another one?
Yes. You know that we read comics and then talk about comics, because as we've established, talking about comics you've not read is just dumb.
Yeah, and you make me do it every Thursday.
Well, we've moved.
Have we?
Yes, we have outgrown our old location.
I don't feel like I've moved.
And we have now moved to twotruefreaks.com.
What was that again?
Twotruefreaks.com. Hey, Kids Comics, still every Thursday at twotruefreaks.com.
Imagine the world you have known all your life suddenly begins to change.
The changes are almost imperceptible at first, but soon everything comes crashing around you.
Past and present contradict each other. History is no longer immutable.
Inconsistencies begin to pop up. New origins rendered stories only a few years old null and void.
Those long gone are no longer dead.
Worst of all, your friends and loved ones are vanishing or changing.
The very fabric of reality surrounding the DC universe is unraveling.
In Smallville, Jor-El and Lara have returned to take Superman back to an unexploded Krypton.
In Metropolis, Superman is faced with a multitude of Batmen.
The time stream, made fragile by countless twists and myriad travels, is now spinning out of control. Time is running out. Quickly.
Only the greatest heroes of every era and reality can stop this crisis in time.
And stop it they must, or the DC Universe will cease to exist, perhaps never to have existed at all.
the heroes and villains of the DC Universe are facing their
Zero Hour.
In 1994, DC published Zero Hour, Crisis in Time, a five-issue miniseries designed to fix some of the continuity issues that had cropped up since the conclusion of the Crisis on Infinite Earths.
This was a huge deal, and because of that, and because Superman played such a large part in that story, From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast, hosted by Jeffrey Taylor
and Michael Bailey,
will be covering the Superman issues, as well as Zero Hour itself.
We will also be looking at all of the official crossovers to the series, in addition to devoting several episodes to the follow-up event, Zero Month, where Superman meets a brand new enemy.
Conduit.
Zero Hour.
Zero Month.
Only at From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast. From Crisis to Crisis can be found at the Superman homepage, which is located at www.supermanhomepage.com, and is part of the Superman Podcast Network, which is located at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
Also be sure to check out the Fortress of Baileytude, which is located at www.fortressofbaileytude.com. There you will find new episodes of From Crisis to Crisis, as well as all kinds of fun bits of business connected to Zero Hour and Zero Month.
Our next match, though, is a match that has been pretty much considered one of the greatest matches of all time. Ricky the Dragon Steamboat with George the Animal Steel versus the WWF Intercontinental Champion, Macho Man Randy Savage, soon to be WWE Hall of Famer Macho Man Randy Savage, with the beautiful Miss Elizabeth.
Yes.
My God, this match. Longest match of the night, by the way.
It was.
At 14 minutes and 35 seconds.
And, I mean, I don't think anybody would disagree as far as technical back-and-forth wrestling and just excitement. By far, this was the best match of the night.
As far as pure wrestling, it was
absolutely
the best match of the night. We'll get into our argument about best matches of the night, I think, later.
Yes.
Because
I have a feeling that you and I are going to see eye to eye on this, but
on a certain level.
On a certain level, absolutely. But to get back to Savage Steamboat, I mean, this is obviously one of the biggest WrestleMania matches of all time. But
it just never stopped. It's like one thing that's amazing is that, like, even when they were like sent outside and that's supposed to be the breather part of the match, it never felt like it stopped. It's like they just kept going and going and going at each other.
They did, man. And from all indications that I've heard, you know, of course, Randy was a guy who liked to sometimes plan things ahead of time with his opponent. And from what I understand, this was a match that he literally wrote out completely himself. He and Ricky Steamboat went over it before. This was, you know, very much rehearsed, you know, or as rehearsed as a wrestling match could be. And, you know, for some people, you know, they like to criticize that, but to me, the proof is in the pudding. This still is regarded as one of the greatest matches of all time.
And I think part of the reason it's considered that is because, really, when you look at it, this is the precursor, and this sets the standard for, you know, middleweights and for the undersized wrestlers, the undersized heavyweights and wrestlers like that, for, you know, being more fast and being able to be a big-time ticket and to put butts in the seats.
Most definitely.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, I feel like this match has been covered a ton. I mean, there's been pretty much everybody could tell you about this match who's ever been in wrestling, you know, who saw it. This just to wrap it all up and kind of just as far as my opinion on it, this to me, if you look back at the first 30 WrestleManias, this has to be one of the top five matches.
Some people's, I can definitely see that. It's not something to where, I mean, unfortunately, it's not in mine.
Right.
Yeah, but you know, it's up to opinion. But I definitely don't disagree with anybody who puts it in their top five of all time.
Certainly, it's certainly a valid argument.
It's definitely, as far as any overall list, it definitely has to be part of the top 10.
Most definitely.
I think this is only my second time seeing the match in full.
Wow.
Well, probably third time, because I remember watching WrestleMania 3 as a kid, but really the only match I remember watching as a kid, or in fact caring about, was Hogan versus Andre,
as
probably everybody does. But I think the second time was a couple years I finally watched the match in full on YouTube, and then this is my third time. And don't get me wrong, I enjoy it. I think it is a great match. It was, again, like I said, they just never stopped. It was just high energy, high pace, and it was just a beautiful technical match.
It was, man. And, you know, the main thing that I liked about it is this was another one of those slow build, slow burn angles. Of course, Savage wins the Intercontinental Championship. Then he attacks Ricky Steamboat with the ring bell and injures his voice box. And this was the culmination of a long, slow build between these guys. And it was perfect. This, of course, would be the only time these guys would face at WrestleMania. A small fact some people might not know, though, is that the following year, of course, in the World Wrestling Federation title tournament at WrestleMania 4, originally Savage and Steamboat were lined up in the brackets to where they would have faced each other if they had won. Of course, in the tournament, it didn't work out that way, but it's interesting to note that there was a change there, and that perhaps a year later, they were looking at a face-versus-face Savage-versus-Steamboat match, which to me is one of those things that it's one of those great what-ifs. Man, I mean,
what happened to... I'm trying to remember what happened at WrestleMania 4 to Steamboat.
I believe, let's see, Ricky Steamboat's... I can't remember who his who the opponent that put him out of the tournament is. Of course, I mean, Randy Savage, you know, he won the title there. Ricky Steamboat's last event, though, pretty much in the World Wrestling Federation, was WrestleMania 4. Aha, it was Greg the Hammer Valentine who eliminated Ricky Steamboat in the first round there. And that was pretty much his farewell, where he would later return to the NWA. And pretty much...
After announcing his retirement.
Yeah, after announcing his retirement to go work at his gym, he went back to the NWA and subsequently had some more of the most highly regarded technical wrestling matches of all time with Ric Flair in 1989.
Anytime Ric Flair and Ricky the Dragon Steamboat faced off against each other, it's an instant classic.
Yeah.
This is a great match. And again, I love the continuity. I love the build up towards the end to where, you know, they're facing each other and classic heel maneuver. Savage, I'm going to use the bell. And that's why George Steele was there. And he takes the bell away from him, knocks him off, knocks Savage off, makes him loopy. So when he picks up, and they make a point that they wonder if his head hit the bell.
Yeah.
I like that from Ventura. Yeah. And again, like I said, Ventura and Monsoon's commentating has been awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, another cool thing about this, like you said, George Steele, the Animal, was there, who of course was Randy Savage's opponent at WrestleMania 2. More of that great continuity that I feel like we don't see today as much.
Yeah.
You know, but at the time, totally awesome. And looking back on it, this, you know, what else can be said about it? This is one of the best of all time. If you haven't watched it, get your ass on YouTube right now or on the WWE Network and watch.
For it's only $9.99.
It's only $9.99. Whatever.
Take a shot.
However you got to do it, by hook or by crook, watch the match if you haven't seen it. If you've seen it before, go watch it again. You won't be disappointed, I promise.
It's definitely one of the matches that I think you should watch this pay-per-view for.
Absolutely.
Our next match features the Honky Tonk Man with Jimmy Hart versus Jake the Snake Roberts with Alice Cooper.
Yes, yes. This was our big musical act, rock and roll involvement for this WrestleMania. Of course, the first one we had Cyndi Lauper The second one, we had Ozzy Osbourne coming out with the British Bulldogs, and the Detroit native at WrestleMania 3, Alice Cooper, coming out with Jake the Snake Roberts. Man, those two guys were like a match made in heaven. I'm telling you.
Now, I was shocked watching this on the network that they did not have Jake. I guess Jake didn't have a theme song.
At the time, no, he did not.
Yeah.
But, so, you know, speaking of theme music again and weird WWE Network inclusions, on previous versions of this show, they replaced the Honky Tonk Man's music with what people perceive, most folks think, is his first theme, Cool Cocky Bad. But that wasn't his first theme. He actually comes out to the ring to his original first theme, which was pretty short-lived. I think it's called That's All Right, Honky Tonk Mama. And to a lot of wrestling fans and fans of theme music, this was something that people could not find for years and years, a good version of it. And somebody recently found it and actually posted it on YouTube, a decent version of it. It's certainly interesting to hear that. this was a huge match, man. Honky Tonk and Jake, you know, they might have...
They put a really good match.
They did, but, you know, I feel like there might have been a little bit of heat there because Honky Tonk, on a Snake Pit interview segment, would, of course, blast Jake Roberts with a guitar, and I don't think it was gimmicked right. I think it was a normal acoustic guitar, which I've actually, of course, being a musician... I think we all do at one time in our journey as a musician. I've broken an acoustic guitar before. It's not easy. I mean, it's not like it just blows to bits like a Jeff Jarrett gimmick guitar. Honky Tonk blasted Jake Roberts with this thing, man, on the Snake Pit, and it cost him some neck damage from there on. So, you know, this was a sort of short match, 7 minutes. It was one that was another one well-built, the signature of the WWF TV at the time. They would spoon-feed you little pieces week by week and keep the storyline going. This was great. Of course, Honky Tonk Man picking up the victory.
Did they roll up? And that is the one thing, is that that roll-up was very a bit suspect. I mean,
yeah,
kind of sloppy. But still, once again, heel picking up the victory. Face is getting the last laugh with them getting a hold of Jimmy Hart. And
Jimmy Hart getting getting the python Damien jammed down his trousers. I mean, Jimmy Hart and animals on this night, were it was just terrible.
My favorite part is, like, so Jake's holding Jimmy Hart, and Allison Cooper's bringing the Snake, and Jim, it's like, no, you're not getting me, and he starts swinging his leg, and Jake literally has to wrap himself like a boa constrictor around his legs to try to hold him still.
Yeah, oh, I'd say Jimmy was pretty well scared out of his wits. Yeah, man, I mean...
He gets it, it's like, oh, God.
Yeah, I mean, I'm honestly surprised that at this point, after being attacked by two animals, that Frankie the Bird didn't come out there and peck his eyes out as well. Poor guy, man.
That was definitely, and again, and that's the thing to say about all the, you know, with Jake Roberts, with Coco Beware, I'm trying to look at the other one, with Junkyard Dog, is, again, we see all these matches where the heels are winning, but they're getting the last laugh,
yep.
And that's the moment,
yep.
You know, and that's what I found surprising is go, because I hadn't seen this pay-per-view, WrestleMania 3, in its entirety for so long. For like over 20 years. This is the first time I've seen it in full. Probably since I was a child.
Yeah.
And, you know, you hear about all these moments from WrestleMania 3, and the ones you see are the faces on top after the matches.
Yeah.
You don't realize that they lose at WrestleMania 3.
Yeah. It's, you know, that's one of those things that it seemed to be a trend on this card.
And speaking of faces losing, our next match, our next to last match, is the Iron Sheik and Nikolai Volkoff with Sleck versus the Killer Bees of Jumping Bee Brian Blair and Jim Bunzel.
That was close there, of course, Mattis with the signature name botch here. I love it. that would be the Killer Bees, Bee Brian Blair, and Jumping Jim Brunzel.
Thank you.
Taking on the Iron Sheik number one,
USA Hachtu champion all time.
Fucking bullshit!
Teaming with the cheap-ass Nikolai Volkov. And, of course, picking up the victory here. Something that didn't really come to fruition for these guys is that originally, if you believe Bret Hart's book, at the time, Vince and the Brain Trust at WWE were thinking of putting the titles back on Sheik and Volkov in January, whenever the Bulldogs dropped it to the Hart Foundation. And basically, Davey and Dynamite said, nope, Bret and Jim are going to get it, or we're not going to drop it, or something to that tune. And Vince agreed, of course, leading to Iron Sheik and Nikolai Volkov, again, if you believe Bret Hart's story, getting shafted out of a big tag title win, perhaps, here at WrestleMania. But they did get the win in a 5 minutes, close to 6 minute match there against the Killer Bees.
They did, because Hacksaw Jim Duggan, it's not mentioned here, ends up coming out. Basically, Nikolai's trying to sing his Russian national anthem, and Jim Duggan had, like, said, I'm not allowing you to sing that here anymore, and chases him. And ultimately, there he gets involved with Slick, and they go into the ring, and seeing his opening. Hacksaw, I think it's Iron Sheik. He hits him over the back.
Yeah, and you know the something that
with the 2x4.
Yeah, something maybe that people might not realize too. You being a Jersey native, perhaps may is the infamous incident that happened on the Jersey Turnpike with Iron Sheik and Hacksaw Jim Duggan being arrested for drugs.
Soon after this?
Yeah, it was soon after this, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, I wouldn't, because again, I'm in Jersey, I'm not a Jersey native.
Okay, right.
Remember, I'm from Florida.
Of course, yeah. but yeah, I mean, those two guys actually got arrested on the Jersey Turnpike for having drugs. I believe, let's see, I think it was, it was May of 1987. So it wasn't too long after this card that happened. So that's certainly historically significant and worth mentioning.
That's why we have you on. You have the history aspect of the show. You're our Dave Meltzer. Let's call it that.
nice.
This brings us to our last match and the main event of the evening for the WWF Championship, as the WWF Champion Hulk Hogan faces and defends his title against the man who's undefeated in 15 years, Andre the Giant, with his manager Bobby Heenan.
Oh, man.
The legend.
This match, it's another one of those matches that it's one of my top matches of all time. I feel like this might be one of the top three of my favorite. If it could be number one, to be honest with you, man. To kind of get to our point about the match of the night, before we really get into the details of this match and the build-up, I feel like Hogan and Andre, obviously it wasn't as good of a technical matchup as Savage Steamboat, but Hogan-Andre had the bigger build-up. It was the match that sold people to come to see WrestleMania 3.
And put 93,000 plus in the seats.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's been debated as far as that number, but it was definitely over 70,000 paid, which, I mean, no matter how you slice it, whether it was 93,000 or not, that's pretty amazing. Hogan and Andre, man, these guys, of course, they had feuded prior to this. They actually took on each other in one of the biggest cards at the time of 1980, the Showdown at Shea card at Shea Stadium in New York. With the roles reversed, Hulk Hogan as a heel and Andre the Giant as the babyface.
And Hogan actually body slammed him there too, but would
he did
lose the match. Actually, it's very interesting because I was watching the recent YouTube episode that I think popped up today of 5 Myths Busted. And one of the ones that they brought up was because, like, first time Andre's been body slammed, I think Ventura said.
It was not.
They brought up, Yeah, they brought up Hogan body slamming him at Che, but two, they showed a newspaper magazine of Harley Race body slamming him in 1978.
Yeah, there were actually quite a few people who body slammed Andre over the years prior to this. The Mexican legend El Canek did it. I believe actually Kamala body slammed him at one time. All those details aside, the point is this was not the first time that Andre had been picked up off his feet and body slammed.
Yeah.
Nor would it be the last time that we saw Hogan do so, but I mean, whenever people look back at the match, that's certainly the most infamous moment, is the body slam.
Heard round the world.
And that was it, man. I mean, if you listen to Hulk Hogan's recollection of it, he weighed 14,000 pounds, and he slammed him through the ring, brother, and the ring exploded.
there might be a slight exaggeration.
Slight exaggeration there, brother, but... Aside from that, man, I mean, this match was perfect, man. I feel like the build-up to this with...
The storytelling in the match was better than... I mean, I love Savage and I love Steamboat, but Hogan... I thought Hogan and Andre told a better story in the match.
Yeah, to me, I mean, obviously Randy Savage was a great heel going into the match after the attack on Steamboat with the ring bell. And of course, just generally how he would, you know, treat Elizabeth up to this time, but I feel like Andre's turn after being so beloved by the fans for so many years and siding with Bobby Heenan, it was monumental, man. I mean, it was just so huge.
I mean, it's almost like you can't talk about this match without talking about a build-up, talking about that infamous Piper's Pit segment. Where he comes in with Bobby Heenan, you're like, wait a minute, what the hell is he doing with Bobby Heenan? As like the threat, the challenge is thrown out, and then the ripping of the shirt and the cross causing Hogan to bleed. I think people completely underestimate how powerful Hogan bleeding was. By just ripping a shirt, he caused him to bleed.
Yeah,
because the cross scraped the skin and it made him look mortal, and it's like, you're bleeding. And then later that epic, you know, where like, do, will you or will you not accept the challenge of Andre the Giant to defend the title at WrestleMania 3? What is your answer? And then epic, yes!
Oh yeah.
Reverberates throughout the arena. It's like,
that was, I mean, it's just the fact that here we are in 2015 and we're still recalling a weekly segment that led up to this match. That should illustrate to everybody, whether you're a hardcore wrestling fan or a casual, recent fan of pro wrestling, the significance of this match. I mean, if we look at the first two WrestleMania cards prior to this, WrestleMania 1 had Hogan and, of course, Mr. T taking on Roddy Piper and Paul Orndorff at Madison Square Garden. It was huge. The next year, we had Bundy versus Hogan in the cage, the three cities for the main event. That was big. But to me, this was the first real major step for pro wrestling to set it up for how big it would become as far as the expansion national and in syndication for the WWF that they started in 86. This really cemented it. I feel like that if something were to happen and history were to have worked out differently and Andre didn't come back after filming The Princess Bride and having back surgery and do this match, I feel like the landscape of professional wrestling
would be different, definitely.
It's one of those things. It's like the weird alternate universe.
It's very scary, actually.
Yeah, most definitely.
The thing I see this match most of all is what it brought was, and we had main event wrestling matches for the longest. I mean, some of the matches with Bruno that sold out the Garden, you know, Flair versus Rhodes a couple years earlier before this and everything. But I feel like Andre versus Hogan was the mega main event match that basically set the standard for what a huge main event match is supposed to be, in particular, what the main event of WrestleMania is supposed to be.
Most definitely. And I also feel like the whole build-up and Andre the Giant's heel turn, I mean, going forward, it's kind of like a blueprint for how to turn somebody who's been a babyface for so long into the ultimate villain. It's, to me, Andre turning, and maybe this can relate it to folks who didn't watch pro wrestling back during this period, or haven't gone back and watched it. This, you know, Andre the Giant turning and aligning with Bobby Heenan was very, very, very similar in stature to Hulk Hogan in 1996, finally turning heel and aligning with the NWO as far as the impact that it really had on fans at the time.
Yeah, even though that Hogan had, you know, Andre was never, I mean, he may have been, I don't recall him really ever being a heel in his 15-year career. He was mostly a babyface. Those who remember Hogan knew Hogan at one point had been a heel before.
Yes.
As Thunder Lips, of course, and other wrestling names. But yeah, definitely, just it's a great example of that as well. You know, as far as the match itself, you know, we're talking a lot about the build-up, and I do want to, because like I said, I think they put on a good match. Maybe the most technically sound match. It's certainly a heavyweight fight, don't get me, I mean, it certainly is that, a heavyweight fight. It's not the most technically sound or fast-paced match, but it's still a good wrestling match, I think.
It is. I mean, you know, like you said, these are two super heavyweights. Andre the Giant at the time, you know, like I said before, you can see it under his singlet. He's wearing a black back support or a back brace.
Yeah, and he could, you know, he couldn't do much. And the fact that he was able to get that leg up for that sort of big boot as he did, that knocked Hogan out.
Yeah.
You know.
Yep. And you know, the feud with Hogan, this match, and of course the main event NBC match in February of 88, just prior to WrestleMania 4, between Andre and Hulk Hogan. That was certainly the pinnacle of Andre's career. By all indications, Andre at the time viewed it as sort of his last hurrah, his last great main event feud where he really was an impact on the card. And he absolutely was. This was one of those moments where the torch was truly passed.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But it was just a wonderful match, and again, that whole moment, I mean, the whole match builds up to that final moment to where Hogan, you know, trying to fight back, and Andre whips him off the ropes, ducks under, bounces off the other ropes, hits the clothesline, and knocks Andre down, and people jump out of their seat when Andre gets knocked down. They're like, oh my God, Andre got knocked down!
That was huge.
And then the build-up, and the perfect camera shot on Hogan, like, yeah, I can feel it as he's hulking up. And then it cuts to the wide shot. And again, I'm bringing my, like, my camera angle and my TV production like schooling here in. But they just a brilliant move to switch to that wide shot to watch as Hogan picks Andre up and body slams him. And, oh my God, that crowd erupted.
Oh, man. That was, I mean, it's the ultimate visual. It's the moment of WrestleMania 3. It's the moment of that feud. It's one of those great snapshots. I mean, people have painted the picture of this. I mean, it's just infamous. You know, the slam, the stare down before the match. Everything about this is just classic, man.
Yeah, I was gonna, to the point to where there are some people that think the body slam's what won it. They forget that he then bounces off the rope and hits the leg drop.
Absolutely.
And gets the 1-2-3. And then just the great, you know, getting the win, and I will always remember that scene of, you know, they get into, by the way, we kind of forget to mention one of the things that really made this WrestleMania unique was the entrance of the wrestlers on this device that actually did not realize was actually driven. I thought for years that it was like on this pulley session. I did not realize that there was drivers on it.
Yeah, I actually believe what it was a scissor lift truck.
Yeah.
They specifically built it were to look like with turnbuckles and ropes to look like
a little ring,
absolutely. And one of the main reasons they did it was because of the fact that this Silverdome was so huge, and also because of the fact that Andre, I mean, you can tell the guy was having some trouble with mobility at the time. And it certainly,
and they didn't really use the scissor feature until Hogan. Hogan was really the only one that got raised up, I think.
Yeah, I believe so. And also worthy of mentioning is that WrestleMania 3 and WrestleMania 6 at Sky Dome in 1990 are the only WrestleManias to feature these ring carts.
Yeah. But just that visual of them going away from the ring, and you see Hogan, he's going, you can't see me do it here, but that where he's like, he's got his right arm up and bent, he's like, almost like, snapping his fingers and like that, and like to a beat and everything, and he's like begging Andre to come on, like Andre, and it goes away, and that shot of Andre, and he's screaming at Hogan, like, this is not over, and there's Bobby the Heenan with his head down.
Yes.
It's like, I had it. I had it.
He had
it. What happened? Like, it was like the story of Bobby Heenan's career that he could never defeat Hogan.
That's right. That's right. Yep. You know, he, and of course, Heenan would never actually manage a client. I mean, unless you count the Andre the Giant win later in 88, where, of course, he later vacated the title or sold it to Ted DiBiase.
Yeah.
You know, that would be the only time, aside from Ric Flair, that Bobby Heenan would manage a World Wrestling Federation champion in the Federation.
Yes. So just, I mean, in my mind, I understand that, in particular, independent wrestling fans, and I really think that's kind of where some of that comes from. And don't get me wrong, I think wrestlers also think it's the better match because it's more of a wrestling, more of a technically sound wrestling match, and there's more wrestling into it.
Yeah.
But I think that it's completely disrespectful to the wrestling that Hogan and Andre did. Was it the most technically sound stuff you could see? No, but still, it deserves its respect.
Absolutely, man. Whenever you talk terms of big box office and bringing people to the arena and getting people to watch on TV, Andre the Giant, Hulk Hogan, man, you can criticize it in any way, but to deny the fact that it's historically significant and that it was big money at the time, you know, it's pretty much undeniable, man.
Absolutely. So that's it for WrestleMania 3. We have our thing, so let's start off with favorite moments. What were your top three moments?
Top three moments, man, I got to say, number one, the stare down between Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant. And this might be a little bit biased in my moments, but because they're all three going to be from Hogan Andre. My number two moment would be Hogan body slamming Andre. And my number three moment would be Andre the Giant getting battered with trash as he comes to the ring on the ring cart.
Wow. Well, out of curiosity, why is that one of your favorite moments?
It was something that, I mean, you didn't really see. I mean, you would see it to some degree, but to me, that really shows you, much like as I related it to Hulk Hogan and the NWO in the 90s, people were so infuriated that this person had turned their back on them and betrayed them and betrayed their emotional investment into the character that they physically threw things at them. I mean, that is ultimate heat. That's perfect villain role. I mean, everything about it is perfect. The only thing that you can really criticize about the match, as we kind of stated, is that maybe it's not the most technically sound, but man, awesome. As far as you, man, I mean, what were your favorite three moments?
As much as I'm going to keep my moment for Hogan and Andre to one, because it's kind of not fair. I'm trying to be fair here, because I am the ultimate Hogan fan. I could just say all three moments are things that Hogan did in the match.
Right.
But number three, Jake Roberts and Alice Cooper putting the snake on Jimmy Hart. Because it was a great moment.
Yes.
The roll-up win moment of Steamboat of Savage.
Perfect finish,
perfect finish. But number one, it has to be, there's a reason that moment lives in infamy. There's a reason why it's painted. That moment of Hogan picking up Andre and body slamming him and then hitting him with the leg drop for the 1-2-3. I would say that entire finish moment, to where right after the clothesline and Andre falls, that moment of him hulking up, the look on his face, the body slam of Andre, and then the leg drop and finish. It's just,
it's awesome, man.
It's awesome.
Agreed.
So, top three matches of the night for you.
Man, I'm going to have to cheat on this one, dude. I'm going to say tied for first for the fact of technical significance and for the fact of historical significance and storytelling. 1A and 1B, Hogan and Andre and Savage Steamboat. And I'm going to put my number three favorite match as probably, I'm going to say, the six-man tag.
I'm not going to see. I have an obviously 3, 2, and 1. Number three, Piper versus Adonis. Because, again, the story is there, and just classic Piper. Number two, Steamboat versus Savage. It is the technically superior match, but and they have charisma, and I'm not denying all of that, and I'm not denying that for some people it stole the show, but it's just the power of the storyline of what number one is, which is Hogan and Andre. It was everything it was advertised to be. It was an epic confrontation. Hogan and Andre told such a great story. They had such... I'm sorry, Hogan and Andre had more charisma than Steamboat and Savage. And I know that's maybe a bit controversial and, like almost tyrannical to say for some people, but I really believe that Andre and Hogan had more charisma in the match.
To me, as I said, ranking them, it's so hard to really pick and choose between the two.
We're picking at things, and I think it does come down to what a person looks for more in a match.
Absolutely.
And I'm definitely more, I think, of a story person. Don't get me wrong, I love technical matches, but I'm more of a story person. It's just, again, I'm not saying it's by much. I'm not saying this is a runaway contest, but at the same point in time, there's a reason, both matches are remembered from this pay-per-view.
Yeah, most definitely, man.
So, final rating, and should people watch this pay-per-view, and what should they watch on this pay-per-view?
Ah, man, if I had to give this out of 5, I would say that this one probably, overall, I feel like some of the matches lacked a little bit. They weren't necessarily, they were built up well, and they were logical feuds and everything, and, they transitioned to further matches, but I would call it about a 3.75, man. Almost a 4. It was a great card overall. The fact that there's 2 all-time classics on it really makes me lean towards a 4. Should people watch this? Absolutely, man. I mean, whether you were a fan at the time or not, this is one of those events that, as a wrestling fan, you need to watch. And it's almost like required viewing. If you're one of those folks who's looking just to get the best parts, I would suggest watching the matches that Tommy and I mentioned here as our favorites. Hogan Andre, Savage Steamboat, as well as Piper Adonis. Those are definitely, to some extent as well, the six-man tag. Those are probably the highlights of the card, but I would say the whole thing is definitely worth watching.
Yeah. I give it a solid 4.5 out of 5. I love the booking of it because, again, they booked it in a way to where you put serious thought into the fact that Hogan might lose, that this was a heels night because the heels were coming away with so many victories. And it really put – and, again, that combined with Andre's undefeated streak and his presence and everything, they did a great job of putting the idea in you that Hogan was going to lose. And it made you like, how is he – it was really the irresistible force – versus the immovable object, and how is the irresistible force going to move the immovable object? And the irresistible force ultimately did move the immovable object.
Very, very well said.
And that all came because of the way they booked everything. And that, and just the presentation, the setting, of everything. You have 3... just classic matches, as we said, Hogan Andre, Savage Steamboat, and Piper and Adonis. And then, all the other under matches were still pretty good.
Most definitely.
Yeah, so for me, the undercard isn't good enough to make it perfect, but it's as close to it. 4.75.
Yeah, I would agree. And again, I feel like I'm being a little bit conservative with my rating. But, you know, to speak on it, like you said, I feel like every match served its purpose well on this card. The pacing was good. Fantastic card. Go back and watch it.
I mean, yeah, it's required. I mean, if you want to understand what wrestling was back in the past, this is required watching. The entire pay-per-view is.
No doubt.
And it's worth watching the pay-per-view at least once if you really don't like the old style. I don't understand how anybody who's a wrestling fan can only watch this once. Because it's such a good old-school pay-per-view. It's so enjoyable. It's so fun to watch. It's definitely something I think wrestling fans will watch again. And if you just want to watch it, watch a good match, you know, you have three great matches you can turn this one on and go to, whether it be Piper versus Adonis, you know, even Race versus Junkyard Dog, Honky Tonk Man versus Jake Roberts. But without a doubt, Steamboat Savage, Hogan, Andre, I will enjoy watching those matches over and over and over and over again. I mean, God damn it, I was a little kid watching Hogan and Andre. When he takes Andre, he's banging his head against the turnbuckle, and I started screaming out, 1, 2, 3, 4. I'm like, I'm a 29-year-old man. Like, how's I doing this? And when he hits Andre with the body slam, I popped out of my seat going, yeah! It's like, I'm 29 years old. I've known the result of this match for over 27 years.
That's it, that alone, you know, to illustrate for folks, like we've said, the fact that it can still do that shows you its historical significance. Awesome card, awesome card. I'm looking forward to seeing if subsequent WrestleManias, along with WrestleMania Play Button and WrestleMania Dallas Cowboys logo, can stack up to the stature and the big-time feel that was WrestleMania 3.
Without a doubt. So that's it for this episode. Corey, thank you so much for coming on. You want to let people know where they can find you, your other work and everything?
Yeah, most definitely. You can find me along with my songwriting partner, Justin. You can find us at chronocord.com, chronocord.com. We produce original instrumental music for use in media, for use television, YouTube, film, radio, as well as by other musicians. We offer music production services. We can pretty much work within any budget, and we are also in the very, very near future on YouTube. We are already on there as ChronoCord. We're also on SoundCloud, but in the very near future, we have some pretty big stuff in the works. As far as me doing a little bit, perhaps, of my own wrestling reviews coming up in the near future, it's in pre-production, folks. I'm going full on nerd here. I'm gonna make this as historically accurate and well researched as possible, Tommy. Hopefully, for one of these or hopefully multiple projects, we can bring you onto ChronoCord. And
dude, just call.
Most definitely. And guys, if you are listening out there and you are a wrestling fan or a music fan, it would really help us out. Go to YouTube, ChronoCord, search us. We have already up there a bunch of great instrumental music that we're releasing. We release new tracks every single week. And as I said, subscribe and you can stay tuned because already in pre-production is some awesome pro wrestling content.
And, of course, if you have any comments or emails about this show, there's several ways to contact the show. Remember, you can email us at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can find us on Stitcher by going to www.stitcher.com. You can listen to the show there, and you can leave us comments there by searching for The Absolution Network. And, of course, you can always find us on our Facebook page, entitled Absolution Network. Like us, leave us a comment there, and of course, you can always leave a comment right here on the website itself at www.an.132productions.com. And of course, while you're there, check out all the other 132 Productions content that, of course, includes my Tom's Prerogative, Tom's Top 10. I'm actually thinking possibly doing a musical project podcast where I sort of look at the songs that made the 90s popular, that's like influenced the Toonami generation. I'm floating that idea around, so I'm just throwing it out there.
That sounds pretty awesome, man.
I mean, it, But like covering not just rap, but also rock and like, I mean, things like groups like Blues Travelers.
Man, I would absolutely love to join in on that. Most definitely, it would be a pleasure, as this has been today.
But you know, you have that. You have the Intergalactic Graphic Review. You have Shin Tiger Girls Wrestling Anime and Fighting Video Game Reviews. You have Jenon Ramos's Toku and voice acting videos, which includes Toku Apocalypse, and of course Anicast, the Otaku Momentum, much more. And let's not forget the other 132 production affiliates, the Comic Book Crazy podcasting site featuring Comic Book Crazy, Hexcast, and Spectacular Webs, and of course Tokyo SOS, the Godzilla podcast featured on the Tokyo SOS podcasting site of www.tokyosos.132productions.com, and Comic Book Crazy is at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And of course, make sure you check out all our friends. Of course, Corey here, Maddie J, T Dub at the WrestleCast, Michael Bailey at Views from the Long Box, Brad Douglas at the Spider-Man Crawl Space, Spidey Dude at Clone Saga Chronicles, Steven Schleicher and the Critical Hit Podcast, and of course Scott Gunn, the 22 Freaks Podcasting Network. So many friends, check them out. And that is it for this. I mean, we are reaching the 2-hour mark, Corey.
This is epic. This is a giant-sized review of WrestleMania 3, man. As I said, it's been a real pleasure. Thanks for having me on. I look forward to discussing some more wrestling with you guys in the near future.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's the epic review that WrestleMania 3 deserves and the epic way we need to start WrestleMania, because we are on the road to WrestleMania. And next week, my wrestling fans, we go to – one of my themes for this month is to actually cover some of the anniversaries. And that means next week we cover the 10th anniversary and the return to Madison Square Garden as we review WrestleMania 10. So, until next time, my wrestling fans, I want you to remember one goddamn thing about me. CM Jew. I'm the best Jew in the world!
You're rolling the have and you're rolling to eat. Each and every day I play to get to know ya. Please wanna be close to you, yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around all around, I bring me down to negative vibes. But I believe, yes, I believe, I say that I believe. I stand among two feet, one be brought down on one knee. I fight with all of my might to get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. How the darkness comes light, twilight unto the heights. Crown lights burning up, out of the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind. I give myself to you from the essence of my being and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling? My love will be holy in a ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Stripping away the legs and reveal your soul. You gotta give yourself up and then you become whole. You're a slave to yourself and them don't even know. Them wanna live that fast life, but your dream.